Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
We begin by acknowledging the Gabigabi people, the traditional custodians of the land on which this podcast episode is being recorded today, and pay respects to their elders, past and present, and to their parents with children with disabilities.
This podcast contains truth, laughter, and the occasional F-word, so it's not really suitable for children.
Well, you probably won't hear quite so much swearing among the beans, you know. Well, yeah. Not suitable for children.
Sometimes you just have to get your shits out. Shit, 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 shit. That's right, this is a language warning. Oh, shit.
Hello, peas and beans. Gary Bean here, welcoming you to this episode of the Four Bean Mix, a Two Peas in a Podcast production. In this episode, specially set aside for Father's Day, Kirk and Daniel and Dino and I answered some of your questions, and we discussed something about our dads and how our relationship with our fathers has related to and impacted upon our role as dads, especially as beans ourselves. Please keep sending in those questions and comments. We love to hear from you, and we will do our very best as the non-experts that we are to chat about anything you would like to hear us talk about. So send us an email or a speak pipe or get in touch through the Hangout on Facebook. We would really love to hear from you. It's been fantastic to hear some of the responses and the questions that we've had, and I would just hope that our chatting together about those things will be of some use to you, whether you're a bean or a pea, professional, you know, peacher, whoever you might be. We would love to hear from you and talk about the things that we know best, which is our lives and our experiences together. So this is the Father's Day 4-Bean Mix. Happy Dad's Day to all the beans out there. Hopefully this will be a day where you can reflect upon your role as a dad and find some moments of love and appreciation. And we look forward to you listening to this as we listen to you in your comments as they come. This is the Four Bean Mix. So let's get right into it with the Four Bean Mix Father's Day episode. I'm Gary, joined in the virtual studio by Daniel, all the way from just outside Edinburgh, Scotland. We have Kirk in New South Wales. We have Dino in Victoria, and I'm in Queensland. And we're glad you're there listening to us. We've had some great feedback, guys. Thank you so much for letting us know what you think. Thank you so much for making suggestions and asking questions. We really appreciate the fact that we're not just talking to ourselves here. As much as we like each other, we actually like to think that there might be people listening, and we know you are. So thanks again for that. We've got a couple of questions to start off with, and then we thought we would just talk a little bit about dadness, because this is focusing in on Father's Day, and we're going to talk about our dads, and we're going to talk about ourselves as dads, and we're just going to see where that goes. So what we're going to do is start with a speak pipe. So now this one comes from our darling Mandy P. Kate and Mandy, who have given us this platform and let us get started together in this this whole discussion with dads and men and beans, as they call us. And she has sent in this excellent little speak pipe. Now, the opening bit is a little bit embarrassing, so just ignore the opening, you know, 20 seconds or so. She can't help herself. She had to say a few things about me, but, you know, that's good on you, Mandy. Thank you so much. But these blokes aren't going to comment on that bit. But they are going to comment on the question you asked. So here we go with Mandy's speak pipe.
Hi, Gary and Dino and Kurt. And Daniel, I just want to say a huge thank you for your four Bean Mix episode, for your individual episodes. Kate and I are just so thrilled that you are a part of this community and you're so skillfully cared for with Gary. Isn't he awesome? And I'm so proud of you, Gary, and you're looking after these men so kindly.
Oh,
and what better man for this journey? And
no.
I'm so proud of you. So keep up the great work. I loved your Four Bean Mix episode. I loved hearing your reflections. I laughed. I had some moments of just thinking about what life is like for you guys. I also had a terrible time when we had a puppy. Out of control, just like my family. So my question, okay, hear me out on this one. This is generic. For example, not drawing from life experience, three little girls under five, two with cerebral palsy, one with an intellectual disability, a little toddler, it's Christmas Eve. We're not hosting the next day, Christmas Day. We're going out. There's a lot of things to be done. There is presents to be wrapped. There is food to be made. There is undies to be picked up off the floor. And our mister was out weeding in the backyard. And I want to know, because this is what we talk about behind your back, what is with the random useless tasks and on a very important occasion? Because this is what we call them. And we screenshot them, we take photos, and we send them to each other. And we say, look at this random useless task. He's cleaning the garage floor. We've got 50 people coming for a first birthday. Okay, what is he doing? Do you get the picture? So I want to know, what is going through your mind? Is it overwhelm when you can walk through the house and stand over 25 pairs of undies and walk over the toys, see all the chaos that's happening in the house, and then go and do some task outside in the backyard, which makes no difference to the family. Anyway, not speaking from personal experience, I want to know, why do you do the random useless tasks? And is it more for our families? Is it more for Beans? Because the overwhelm is greater, I suspect. So anyway, answer me that. Keep up the great work. Hopefully I can meet you all one day and Kate and I can see you. We're super proud of you all. Thank you.
Thank you,
Kate. Where do you go from there?
Well, I think that's the end of our episode tonight.
Is it really bad that during that time when we're talking about useless tasks that I kept thinking about we really need to come up with a jingle for the four of us? It's like, so was I, is that exactly?
Well,
that so you know what?
Use of our time,
there,
yes.
We've got a point. There's a point to this. She's got a point.
Oh, man. What do we say to that, guys?
Go on, Daniel.
Okay, so there's a couple of things. I noticed that in the first example that Mandy gave, she made a point of saying we're not hosting tomorrow, we're going out. And there's a lot of work to be done. But then in the second example, she said, well, there's a first birthday party the next day and it sounds like people are coming around. So I actually think those are two really different scenarios. I can't explain the first one. Like if you are going out, I don't know. I personally feel a lot of time pressure when we have to go out and get things ready. And I don't know if it's something I could speak to. But the second one I do find really interesting, like the pressure that, well, I am talking about the pressure, right? So I guess if the question is, do guys feel an overwhelm, then the answer is probably yes already, because I'm using that word. But when it's when the scenario is that there's something happening at the house and things are not ready and so on and so forth, I think yes, there is a pressure, and I want to be very diplomatic. I want to say that there's like probably, as what Mandy's getting at, there is a difference between the way we would handle it and maybe the way women would handle it. And I'm just aware that when women are in this culture, the way that it gets talked about how you handle things when there's pressure and there's other people involved, I think is really different from the way we talk about it. And there's a lot of like rhetoric about, you know, you've got this, you know, you can handle it, you're bossing it, you're on top of it all. And often when I hear that through podcasts and other places, I feel like I want to just say, give yourselves a break, basically. It's not particularly urgent to, you know, to sort of demonstrate that you're on top of it all, or to feel like other people who are coming around are maybe expecting you to show that you are in command and in control. Because I think this as someone, you know, who goes around to other people's houses who are in similar situations, like if anyone is going to give another person a break on the state of their house before an event, it's going to be like you're going to give a break to the person who's got three kids with extra needs and, you know, and it's a massive occasion. Like I think maybe the culture that women, you know, are talking to puts a bit more pressure on them to perform at a really high level that is maybe, I think, sort of reaching towards unrealistic expectations. And as a man, when you're brought into that scenario, you kind of feel that additional pressure of your wife or your partner's expectations, you know, in addition to just the fact that the event is happening and it already has its own pressure. And I just think, yeah, I think we could all cut each other a bit of slack and understand that in our situations, other people are going to cut us a bit of slack as well. Right. And I think, yeah, that I think we should, if we have that attitude, I don't know if it explains men's bizarre behavior, but certainly she's right to say that when there's pressure, you kind of opt out and go and do other things. But I think we could all like stand to understand that the pressure is maybe us on ourselves rather than other people coming around and having expectations.
Yeah, I think that's a really valid point, Daniel, regarding, you know, the pressure side of it. And I think that's something I would do to myself if I've got people coming over, you know, I've got people for a barbecue or whatever, that I look around and I think I've got weeds over there and I really want to get them out before people come over. So I know that, you know, Tara might be in the kitchen doing things and trying to get the girls dressed, but all I can focus on is, hey, I've got pride in my garden. I don't want my friends and all that people to see those weeds. So that's what I'm prioritizing right there. And it's probably gonna piss my wife off, but I know I'm gonna feel really good when my friends are over, because that's not all I'm focused on. So I think there's that. It's tragic, or it's unfortunate that Mandy gave the example of cleaning the garage floor, because one of the things I make sure I do before people come over is I actually vacuum the garage floor, because I had those rubber gym mats down, so I can actually use the hand stick and vacuum it. But look, in all chances, the people coming over are going to go through the front door, not through the garage anyway. So I guarantee that would be something that Tara would see me do and think, what the fuck is he doing that for? That is, but again, I take pride in my man space, my garage, and I want to make sure that if my boys go in there, or if people come through there, that that floor's nice and clean and that's
looking exactly. And you're so spot on about pride in, you know, there are areas of the house where I feel like it's my domain and, you know, and the lawn, you know, and the garden and, you know, getting it done is definitely one of them. So, you know, I want to make sure that that's looking good, especially if there are people coming over. And, you know, that's my, you know, I feel like especially the garden, you know, the lawn, you know, when I'm on the lawnmower and I'm out the front and I'm waving to the neighbours across the road, you know, I'm feeling like I'm a man. I feel good and feeling good about myself. So, you know, it's my good space. So it's like...
Yeah. It's also, I think it comes down to control too, not control being a control freak as such, but more that, you know, there's so many things that go on in our additional needs lives and dynamics that one thing I can control and I know that I can rule and make feel the pride and feel really good about and also relieve the weight or pressures is my lawn. You know, I like that to look neat and nice. I like people to drive past my house and think that he's got the best lawn in the street. But it's one of those things that I've noticed there's a correlation between if the yard and the lawn and everything gets on top of me, then I feel like everything else is getting on top of me. When I've got it in ship shape, then I feel like I'm in control of things, and that sort of compounds to other areas of my life too. So I think that's something that look, stereotypically, you know, most women probably wouldn't understand, but when you know, even there's a couple of weeks of shit weather in summer and the lawn grows three times higher than it needs to be and it all starts to get on top of you, I think it's almost a metaphor for other things in personally in my life. And then I think, fuck, now that's starting to piss me off now and this, and look at my grass and, you know, and Tara's actually said to me a few times, you know, she really likes that that I like that I keep the lawn looking nice, and she can tell that it actually when I'm on top of it relieves some stress in other areas too. So
the other thing is I also know that I only have one small window every weekend to potentially do some tasks that if I don't do these tasks now, I know that it's not going to happen because, you know, weekends and then come work and that's another week. And like you said, especially with, I know we keep referring to lawns, but, you know, if I leave that for another week, it's going to look shit house, you know, for another week. So I know I've got to grab my opportunity when I can. So, you know,
Is this all this like still true if you were using like the Christmas Eve example? Like if you guys were heading off somewhere for an event like that, like I don't know, or have you done something stupid, something that others would see as ridiculous, like in a moment like that?
I can't think of anything where I've done something which is totally pointless. Although, you know, I'm sure my wife and probably everyone's wife listening would be able to correct their husbands when they say they don't do those things. But it's probably something that, you know, we do subconsciously without even giving any thought to it. But, look, I think most wives, if they're under a bit of stress and they're trying to get everything ready and go out and the husband does something totally pointless, they're probably going to chip him for it. So
that's it.
I'm kind of wondering what's going on if mum is taking photos of dad doing these activities to share and, you know, see what he did today, see what's going on today. I think what that speaks to is something that might be a bit deeper, that maybe that couple are not in a place where they're actually communicating enough to each other to say, listen, mate, can you please leave the weeds just for now and come in and help me with the undies or something and then go back to the weeds? You know, I appreciate what you're doing out there. But so it says to me that, and this is universal in relationships, isn't it? The fact that sometimes we'll both get on each other's nerves. I think Mandy's point about this being more so or more pronounced when there are additional needs and disability is certainly true. The pressure's really on, isn't it, sometimes? But I'm just wondering if I was that dad and I thought I was doing something. Well, okay, there's two things. I either might think I'm doing something useful, in which case I need to just be pointed out gently, but it would really help more if you did this instead right now. Or I might be avoiding the reality of the situation and just hiding out, weeding the garden and not paying attention to what really needs to be done. If that's the case, that's a different matter. That's me being needing to be called out rather than just called in, you know. I don't know.
Is the sort of the way that Mandy worded that question, it was sort to me, the way I interpret it was, it was a bit tongue-in-cheek. It's sort of like she'd message her friends to go, look what this dickhead's doing again, but not in a way that go, you know, my husband's hopeless, what a shit dad, what the hell's going on with our relationship? It sounded more like she's messaging my best friend going, oh, look at such and such. All this shit's going inside. He thinks, buddy, you've got to pull a few weeds out. He's the most important thing. So I feel like the question came from a place of lightheartedness and joking. Okay. But, you know, I'm sure that they're a bit of lighthearted communication would probably help the guy understand that, you know, if I was really going to make the most of this time, I could probably help do things inside, which would take a bit of stress off my partner at this moment. Yeah.
Yeah, I think no, go on.
Go I was on, just going to say, is it the opportunity of taking photos of a useless dad's also a time-wasting exercise as well?
Ooh,
yeah. Yes. I think absolutely.
Where do you get to take photos?
Well, I mean, imagine if, and look, this is not, you know, I don't want to get too gender-based here, but imagine if we could get controversial, but if we started snapping photos of our partners, doing that in reverse and flicking them out to our mates, going, oh, look what she's bloody doing again. Look, I don't know whether the joke would be taken as well as it would from the other way around, but it's funny. There's one thing that I do every time without fail when we're having people over, and as I try and get as much done as I can, particularly outside and things, or help inside if I can. And then if I know they're coming at 2 o'clock, at 2 minutes to 2, I'll jump in the shower. Every time you have people over, they arrive and I'm in the shower. And look, that's probably just poor time management. And I notice, and it stresses me out. But to Tara's credit, she doesn't actually get the shits too much with it. But yeah, look, I've definitely got to get better at that.
I just think, like, I'm putting myself, you know, in the shoes of someone else. I, to my knowledge, have not had a photo taken of me doing something stupid, but I cannot imagine that I would react very charitably if I came across one. And I think, like, in this particular circumstance, to get back to what you were saying, Gary, about, like, communication, like, why would a guy be doing something like this? Like, either he's genuinely unaware of, like, genuinely just not aware of what's going on, or he's feeling the pressure and it's an avoidance kind of strategy, or he's an asshole and he's trying to be an asshole by foisting everything off onto his wife. And I feel like if you're taking a photo of someone, you're kind of going towards that third option. Like, that's maybe your assumption. And it's not, I don't know, I feel like you wouldn't be, you're maybe not treating him like in good faith, like that there might actually be like a genuine thing beyond his control or beyond his awareness that is doing this. So I think you do need like the gentle prod and the kind of coming together in agreement on what the priorities are before, I don't know, before joking about it behind his back, actually. I don't think I would appreciate that very much if I was in a state where I'm just not aware of something or I'm overwhelmed.
Mm. And surely that comes down to communication as well between us and our wives as well, and, you know, pulling us in and saying, you know, hey, you know, there's a lot to do inside as well. You know, why don't we tackle this morning, you know, in a diplomatic way? And I'm sure, you know, I'm always open to listening and to compromise. Well, not so much compromising, but always there to help out. So, you know, I'll never shy away from a task at hand, you know, but, you know, perhaps I have looked at it the wrong way and have focused on the wrong area, but, you know, I'm always willing to do what needs to be done if we talk about it openly, I suppose.
Well, and I think that comes down to common sense. And look, I'm happy to admit that I think, particularly in our relationship, but I think more so women over men, they probably have more common sense than what men do in most situations at most times. So I think it's probably that, hopefully more so than the serious relationship issues. Yeah, look, I think obviously communication is paramount. Great communication between couples or in relationships would help solve all that.
Once again, I love the fact that we're all coming at this from our own perspective, which is actually our fallback position. None of us are claiming to be experts on marriage, you know, counselling. But quite apart from that, Each one of us has had a different reaction to that, and I think I love that. You know, I love the fact that we're all pulling something different out of our own experience there. Can we move on, guys, because we're really – that was great. That was fantastic. And just keep in mind, we'll be finishing up with a I heard someone say, so keep that in mind as you go. This is a question. Are you okay if we move on? Is that all right? Or,
yes.
Yeah. Cool. Okay. Question came into the in by email, and there's no name on this one. This one was another anonymous. Hi, Beans. I love getting the dad's perspective on pee parenting. I would love to get your view on managing differences of opinion between yourself and your partner on the way best to support your pee shoot. Maybe things like letting them take risks, forcing them outside their comfort zone, special school, etc. My husband and I are on opposite pages and at different stages of acceptance when it comes to our pee shoot. Well, it's probably not surprising. It's probably not uncommon. We had disagreed about assessments, diagnoses, and therapies, and now we cannot agree on schooling. He thinks he's right, and I think I'm right. Now, there's the sentence. I'm our pee shoot's primary carer and do the vast majority of therapies and learning about her condition, so I believe that I know what's best. I would love any advice or hear about what it's like not being the primary carer and if your opinions or feelings are dismissed because of it.
Yeah, so look, I'm happy if you guys are happy for me to jump in on this one first, but that's, that question really resonated with me. And look, I guess to answer the question up front is I've let Tara lead all those decisions. We've had a lot of communication on it, but, you know, I haven't been shy to say, you know, the first 5 years of my daughter's life, I definitely didn't handle it right. And coming down to my mental health, so diagnosis around depression and things, that first 5 years, I was more than happy to let Tara take the lead with all that. And whatever she felt was the best, then I'll let her sort of make that decision. So I think that in her role there, she was the primary carer and she did all the therapy. And from where I knew and my head was at, she was going to make much better informed decisions than I could. So, look, I think that she was the best suited if I was going to be the best parent I can be for her, let her make those decisions or at least give me the reasons why she thought her way around that was the best way to go. And, look, I don't regret that at all. I think all those decisions she made were right. I think if you're the primary carer and you do all the therapies, then you don't have more of a say, but I think the amount of information and education you've gathered over those years should pull more sway in making these big decisions.
Yeah, and you're right. And because I think we even spoke about it last time, it's even like at doctor's appointments and things like that where, you know, quite often you sort of sit back and my partner Claire would do a lot of the talking in those sort of situations. And it's not because of it's a difference of opinion. It's primarily because, you know, that Claire has been the major sort of carer for the, you know, most of the hours of the day when, you know, when I'm struggling with work life. So it's tough. But, yeah, we definitely have a difference of opinion, though. I know, especially with risk-taking and things like that, and I do think, you know, we do quite often butt heads because, especially with Lexi, she has she's quadriplegic cerebral palsy. She has an electric chair, but she uses her head switching to be able to navigate the chair, which is amazing technology. But, you know, I love letting her run free. I love getting her out in the open road and, you know, we're down the middle of the street and we're putting it in fast mode and she's gunning it down the street and I just see Claire in the background. She's just like freaking out, but it's but there's a part of me that just wants to let Lexi live a little bit or whatever, and there's little things like that I just do. So, you know, we do come, we butt heads on that sort of thing, so I completely get it as well. And it's, you know, but I don't know what to do. You know, it's a part of me that I want to keep doing as well. So it's going to be, it's got to be a lot where we're always going to have to butt heads, unfortunately, I think, as well.
I think I have to come to this question from a slightly different angle, partly because I don't think Marnie and I ever really were divergent on the really big issues. And maybe because Ivy's treatments were and diagnoses were so specific and so narrow that there wasn't a lot of wiggle room there anyway. But the reason I have to come to it from a different angle is because I am the primary carer at the moment.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, and I really feel it when the person writing the question says, you know, I'm the primary carer and my husband or my partner is kind of lagging behind and or you know, we're at different working at different paces and I feel like I know what's best. I feel like I kind of want to push a little bit back on that because this is me speaking as a primary carer. Like, one thing I notice in myself, my own kind of flaws really, is that because I'm doing this for 10, 11, 12 hours a day, every day at a stretch, I feel a great urgency for things to move along quickly at my pace because I've got so much more time and like put into the job and I want, you know, any problems to be addressed like really in a way that suits me in a timely fashion. And I'm aware sometimes that my pace is not the pace of anyone else. You know, that because I'm the primary carer with all those hours, that kind of shapes the pace that I would like and expect, and the world doesn't match up with that. And that's the case sometimes for Marnie, my wife. It's the case for other people. It's the case for professionals. You know, sometimes others are just a bit more hands off. Let's give it a bit more time. And I'm sitting there going, but I see this. I know what the effects of this are, and we need to move now. And I'm not saying I'm wrong in that, and I'm not saying that the person who wrote the question would be wrong in that at all. Just that you know, the pressures of being the primary carer can give you your own pace and your own expectations that other people just they don't have that pressure, they're not moving at that pace, and they kind of need to come to it in their own time. So I think without knowing what the issues are, I think you just have to go into it with an awareness that even though you may be best placed to know the needs, you also are operating on a different level that you need to be aware of, that it takes others a great deal of effort and time themselves to come to that level.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Yeah.
So Daniel, I guess if looking at that, it sounds like you're saying that the perspective that you can get from those people who aren't the primary carer, it can be very valid, and it can actually help you think about the way you're approaching things to reassess the decisions that you would have just made without having a real good think about it.
Yes, and it's taken me a long time to get to that point, but basically what I try to do now is go in saying, yes, I am the one with the observations and I can tell you how things play out in the real world day to day, hour by hour. And I can imagine like any proposed changes or solutions, whatever, I can imagine how they might play out. And I'm probably the person best placed to do that. But also I try to have like, I guess, a humility to it and just to say, like, because I'm in this pressure cooker environment, I may not have the clearest view of the whole situation as it affects everybody. And when I'm interacting with other people, whether it's my wife or professionals, I just want, I go to them, I say, tell me what I can't see. Like, tell me what I don't know, because I don't know everything, you know? And it's hard to do that, like, because you really, you are spending so much time that you feel like you, you are entirely on top of it, but actually, you know, you have to make the effort to say, no, there are other perspectives here and other kind of timelines and paces that have to be taken into account if the situation as a whole is really going to come together and not just you and the child.
And there's often a lot at stake, isn't there? These aren't decisions about which car to buy, you know, the, or even, it, you know. Where this push and pull happens in every relationship. And, you know, if the relationship is fundamentally healthy, it's a good thing. We balance things. We get each other's perspective. We correct each other and so on in a way that is good because we're a team. If we're not functioning well as a team, then, of course, this exacerbates the feelings of being ignored or, you know, not respected or whatever. I know our kids, Christopher, I'm the same as you, Daniel. I spent most of my time with Christopher as a child as his primary carer, and I think the assumption in the question was probably correctly that generally that's not the case, so, you know, fair enough. But he and his sister eventually got to the point where they called us overdone and underdone. So I was overdone and their mum was underdone. You know, she's far more spontaneous, you know, far more willing to take chances and so on than me, and I think that's partly because I could see what was at stake, but it was also just a temperamental difference. That's the way we would have been anyway, probably. And it was good. I think we were able to counter each other, but it was only because during the worst of times or the most difficult of times, we were both trying to find a solution that we could both go with, and therefore you work it out. But if you're not at that at that point, then yeah, it can be really frustrating, I'm sure.
I don't want to speak out of school here and look too deep into that question, but from my experience, I know that acceptance of everything that came with Willow's diagnosis came with my acceptance of my mental health issues. So I'm not trying to assume that there's any mental health issues going on the side of the husband or the partner in that scenario. However, I did find once I got that managed and under control, that the acceptance of all the things that came with the diagnosis, I was able to open it up and see a lot more clearly, and then also accept the right way or the best decisions for that. And it allowed Tara and I to talk more openly about those things and work through them together. So, look, if there is anything, any mental health issues involved with the partner, there could be some things on that side which could definitely help to help the relationship or the couples there sort of come to agreement on things.
Fantastic observation.
Yeah, and it's also mental health issues, like whether or not they're there. It just generally it can be hard for people to accept, you know, some news that they've received, and I wonder if because as we know from being further down this journey, it's like so often it is you and your partner against the world, right? And if you and your partner are against each other, then, I mean, to me that just spells doom. Like you need to be kind of, if not marching in lockstep, at least, you know, treating each other in good faith and working together towards a solution. And I think it sounds like the person writing is trying to get their partner on board with that. And one way, you know, if the partner is struggling with acceptance and saying, well, what does this mean for school? What does this mean for treatments or whatever? Like out there in the world where there's this adversarial situation, maybe one way would be to just say, let's just try things here to adjust, to make accommodations here between us at home in this space first and see how that goes, you know, with not the pressure to commit to something straight away and a more of a gentle guided landing into seeing how accommodations and adjustments might play out in just day-to-day life, like domestic life, rather than a full structural change to everything. you know. I mean, it's like, I remember just when we were coming to it, like, what does it mean that Ivy is deaf? What does it mean for communications? Like, it's hard to take just on its own. Like, just hearing that and just hearing you have to change X, Y, and Z was, like, a massive upheaval. But the way we got there in a way that was, you know, towards, like, a good solution in the end was by really small, simple baby steps at home. Like, okay, we're going to sit down at the table. We'll sit in a circle so that we can all see each other's lips as we're speaking. We'll learn, like, simple signs for things and just use those in our dinner time conversation. And it's like, no pressure, no commitment. Let's just see how it goes. And if we notice, like, an effect, maybe it's something we should stick with. And if we stick with it, then maybe we should later on find people who can give us even more. And that's kind of how you get into it, instead of the, like, I don't know, diving in all at once. Mm-hmm. If you can do that, you're able to do that.
So I guess the bigger picture can be very daunting at times. And when you do, when you look at that daunting bigger picture, then your mind races off too far down the future, rather than just focusing on the little things you can do the here and now, which will compound to make that bigger picture a lot easier in the long run. But it's about coming together and doing that.
Yeah, it's so easy, isn't it, for your mind to race with that bigger picture and just get so far down the track.
Yeah.
It just gets, it just gets so overwhelming so quickly. But you're right, you know, if you could just do the little things, it could just accomplish so much, you know, right there and then.
Wow. You blokes, I tell you what. I can just sit here and listen. You know, this is wonderful. Let's talk about being dads in a bit more of a specific way now, because I think we've given about 20 minutes to both of those questions, and I think that's all we can do at the moment. And I love hearing what you have to say, each one of you. What if we talk about our dads and being dads? Okay, because it seems to me that one of the most important things about forming us as men to become dads is the relationship we have with our parents, but in a particular way with our dads. So let's just talk about that. How was it with your dad when you were growing up, and how has that played into you being a dad? Be it positive or negative, what do you reckon?
Well, I'm happy to start it off, and I know I mentioned it the last time as well, that, you know, my background's Italian, so, you know, my generation of both my mum and dad were just so old school proper, you know. But then, you know, I think about what my dad went through as a, you know, I think he was like 14 or 15 when he came to Australia on a boat, you know, by himself, to come over and find a new life from Italy, and, you know, and then had to find work before he could go make enough money to then send it back home to then bring the rest of the family over, which is just insane when I think about how young they were to do such a, you know, crazy adventures. You know, it's just so, you know, so, you know, I just always admired him for the things that he did like that. In my early childhood, my dad was great. You know, he would take me to the footy, and, you know, because that were my best childhood memories of just, you know, my dad taking me to the footy, and, you know, every Christmas there'd be a Christmas party at his work, and he was just worked in a foundry, you know, it was just a hard labor, but every Christmas he would take me in, and I just remember the melting of metals and what he used to do was just really good. But then, you know, as I grew older and grew wiser, you know, then, you know, I would see Dad, and he was just a hard-ass man as well, you know. He was always complaining to Mum about the food, and, you know, was never grateful. And then, you know, and it was just, you know, it really got to me as I got older and became an adult, and more so especially as I became a parent. And, you know, he's not the world's greatest communicator, and you know, and it got to a point where I started resenting my dad towards the end, and it was just like, you know, Dad, just have a conversation. Just talk to me normal. I just want to, you know, ask me how I'm doing. And, you know, one of the things that I always wanted, you know, from my dad was just for him to tell me how proud he was of me or things like that. And, you know, my dad passed away suddenly about 3 years ago. And I always dreamed that, you know, the one thing I never got off my dad was I don't think I ever heard him ever say that I love you, you know. And he was too much of, you know, he was just very stubborn, especially the Italian sort of mentality, you know, that sort of emotional sort of thing, you know, was very hard to get out of my dad. And I think I now as a parent want to be the complete opposite to kind of what that sort of was. And, you know, I tell my girls every day how much I love them and I want to spend as much time with them as possible. And it's you know, why I had a fantastic father. There was just so many things, and I really regret that I didn't make it to his deathbed. You know, I wasn't there, and he died so suddenly that I didn't make it. And I thought that I always had a dream that on his deathbed that he would hold my hand, or I would look at him and we would share this thing of saying how much we loved each other and how proud he was of me. And I never got it, and I kind of, you know, still live in resentment of that. But I know he did. That's the thing. But there's a lot that I want to do differently now as a dad compared to what I grew up with.
Yeah, that's a shame, Dino.
The only time my father has ever said to me, "I'm proud of you," was when I built a deck. It was a bloody good deck.
I was going to say, it had to be a great deck.
Fucking good deck, you know. Yeah. And I was proud of it, but I didn't want him to say he was proud of me for that. A bloody deck. Who cares? And I've built a couple since. The thing about saying I'm proud of you, and you just said I know he loved me. Well, I know Dad's proud of me. So, okay, at that point, I'm okay with it. But, gee, it would have been nice to hear it occasionally.
Yeah. I agree.
I tell my kids I'm proud of them all the time because I am.
Mm. Absolutely. More so than ever.
Do you mean, Gary, that aside from, like, you know, the deck being the thing that brought it out, that do you mean that, you know, being told that he was proud was not necessarily the thing you really wanted to hear, that pride was lesser than love or something else?
Well, no, I mean, I would have liked to hear him say, "Man, you've done you're making a good fist of this father thing. You really are a good dad. I tell you, I look at you and I see what you do, and I'm proud." That's what I wanted to hear.
Mm-hmm. And even like you know, Dad, like Lexi's now 10, so there was a good 7 years of me struggling with, you know, coping with a child with a disability, and you could see the struggles and. You know, more so than ever, you know, to see what myself and Claire go through on a day-to-day struggle, you know, just like to even say, "Wow, I really feel for you, what you guys are going through, and it must be really hard," you know, is, you know, I really, you know, just to acknowledge what we've been, what we went through or what we're going through, you know, would have been, you know, something, you know, but it just wasn't kind of him, if, you know, but that's him, you know. I used to have to keep explaining this to Claire, especially more my partner, you know, because, you know, Claire doesn't come from an Italian background and doesn't understand, you know, that it's quite common, you know, for this generation of sort of immigrants of this, that it's kind of how they are, a lot of them. And it's like, well, you know, I was too accepting, I suppose, accepting of him rather than to sort of just push it out of him. So, but that's how it kind of was.
Yeah, it's, I guess if we're talking about my dad and the relationship that we had, I've always had a father who's been, you know, a really good mate. I've always known, though, that his level of maturity and mine probably got parity when I was about 12. And I actually said that in my wedding speech, just to stir him up a bit in front of, you know, 100-odd people, which got a good laugh. But I think one of the things that I respect or appreciate most about our relationship was, even though there is that fact, he's always been sort of the first person that would level me or ground me or pull me into line if I was acting, you know, like a dickhead, or if I was going through something serious, you know, like the birth of Willow and things, that he knew the moments when to be the dad or be a dad, you know, he's still around. And I've always really appreciated that fact. And, you know, listening to you guys now, I think I appreciate the fact more that, you know, he has told me a lot through my life that he loves me and that he's proud of me. And to use the example around Willow and being the parent, he's always saying how proud he is of the way Tara and I have, you know, just run with that and manage that. So I think, you know, I'm very lucky to have a father who I can call a mate, and sort of have a joke around with. And sometimes he annoys me because he thinks his jokes are funny and he acts a bit silly. But I know deep down that, you know, he's going to be the first person that's going to, well, nowadays not physically tote me up the ass, but basically pull me into line like a dad needs to. Yeah. And, you know, and I'm really grateful for that.
It's good.
Yeah, just listening to you guys talk about your dad, I realized I don't know what I would have said about my dad, like, before Ivy came along. That's 8 years ago now. But, well, I mean, I guess for his, you know, for one of his birthdays, I think it was his 50th, the 55th, maybe I, you know, described him kind of in very traditional masculine terms, like he was a hardworking guy and all this sort of stuff in a speech that I gave. And he's an immigrant too. Dino, maybe a bit like your dad. He's from England, okay, though. Came over on the boat, had his brother and sister with him. His parents were not really on the scene, so he was taking care of them, and they, you know, they had nothing. They lived in the tin shacks out in Western Sydney and, you know, worked his way up. And I, you know, yeah, I think, like, back at that birthday, I did, you know, I really put an emphasis on, you know, the work he did for his family and for us. And, you know, he was a blue-collar worker and then a cop later on, but he was a carpet cleaner for a long time, like stuff like that. And now I look at him and I think, like, I kind of regret saying that, because back then I thought, oh, that was the person, like he was a stoic kind of, you know, hard worker. When I think now, like, seeing the way he is with Ivy, where he's such a clown and, like, he physically, like a clown, like he's dancing, he's making stupid faces, he's making ridiculous jokes, and he will try anything with her. Like, she's completely taken him out of his comfort zone, and it's amazing to see how up for it he is. I kind of feel like that's the real person, like that's the real dad, that, you know, who really likes to be stupid and goofy and have fun, and not that it was kind of like, you know, there were economic necessities that kind of took him away from us for a long time, and that was kind of a distortion of the real guy. And he's it's almost like he's now being, I think I can see the father that he wishes he could have been more of when he's with Ivy. And I noticed too that, like, when he tells stories about being with me or my brother, he's telling stories again about really goofy things that were very much the minority of our experience as kids. But that's like, that feels like that's when the real human being got to come out from under all the work, you know? And yeah,
and so, is that because Ivy is his granddaughter, or because Ivy has these additional needs, do you think, or maybe a bit of both?
Probably like both. Yeah, I think it's really both.
And to bring out the dad in those dads who couldn't be a dad. I think that seems to be common.
I think that's right. And I think one thing that I really appreciate about my dad now, that I've only come to appreciate in the last few years, is that, as I said, he came from England, he came from Essex. Like, he came from England to Australia with, like, a real very strong class shame kind of background, like status, like very, very, I think very strong, like know your place kind of thing. Like, you are not the person who's going to really make it anywhere. And, you know, when you come from that background, you get shut down really quick whenever you try anything unfamiliar or that's a bit out of your wheelhouse. And he did, like, I know by my grandparents, his parents were very much like, stop, you know, just really, you're an idiot, don't try it. And when you have a kid like ours, you have to, like, there's no textbook that you can follow, is there? Like, you just have to try so many different things that are so far out of your comfort zone for us. I know for us as parents, but also for grandparents. And to his credit, like whatever baggage there was that he brought with him from England, like he, like that is not a barrier to him trying just anything you could ask of him, which is quite amazing, really, to think what he must have to like kind of what instincts probably from long ago he has to jump over to get to that point and then go ahead and try it. It's really impressive.
Yeah. Just on that, Daniel, do you have, like, is there any resentment that you feel, not necessarily towards him, but just towards that situation that, you know, you don't remember having him being like that, but he obviously is now with your daughter?
No, no resentment at all. I feel pity more than anything else that he didn't get a chance to be that way. Like, that feels like the way, to me, watching him now, that feels like the way he wanted to be the whole time. Like, and no, I wish he could have been that person.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, yes, it may be generational, but the real person was not allowed to come out when you were a dad at some point because you had to be the breadwinner and you had to, there were no options. And if you weren't tough with your mates, you know, you weren't going to make it. You're going to get slapped around. And now that you're a grandfather and it's not up to you to to do that anymore, yeah, maybe that's the liberating moment for a lot of blokes.
Yeah.
Wow. And Dino, we're aware of the special circumstances for you because your dad's passed on and, you know, 3 years ago, I think you said, whereas for us, our dads are still with us, and that makes a difference to the way you think about these things, I guess, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely, it does. Yeah. And, I just remember because I was the one that was at his funeral. It was me that, you know, was the one who gave the eulogy and, you know, it was, you know, I think there's a lot of things that I've never really spoken about to my siblings about how much resentment I still had with my dad before he passed away. And, you know, that I had this resentment. I never really sort of explained that when they sort of asked me to do the eulogy, you know, there was a part of me that, you know, was so honoured to be doing it, but there's a part of me also that's, you know, sort of going, oh, man, there's so much untold stuff that I haven't said to anyone that is really eating me up inside that no one really knows about either, which was really a tricky situation that I just sort of had to put to the side and then just, you know, really just, you know, just talk about how, you know, his life and, you know, and all the good things, you know. Say that he was still he was an amazing, wonderful man, very funny and very charismatic, and you know it was great, but just, you know, there was a lot of things in there that I just wish could have been better.
But having said all of that, Dino, what you said was the way you have responded to that is to be the best dad you can be, and to counter those things. And your kids don't have that experience at all, do they? And I'm the same. I became a dad that I never had, and I'm proud of the.
Yeah,
you know, I didn't do it perfectly, but I made sure my kids didn't have those same deficits.
Yeah.
Whereas some guys might take that anger and they'll take it out on their kids and, you know, it gets passed on generation to generation. But on the other hand, you know, a new generation can turn things around. So good on you, mate.
Fantastic. And really, we're only just going, you know, obviously your kids are a lot older and, you know, adults now. We're obviously, I'm only in the middle of that childhood. So, you know, these are really special moments that I really – want to enjoy and try to make the most of when we can. So, yeah.
Wow. I do love my dad, and he has been a very good man, and he has tried his best. I can say that without doubt.
Mm.
No question at all. And when I say the way his dad was to him, you know, it's he did far better than he got himself. A couple of things came up here, and I'm just aware that one of us has to go, and also we like to keep it to an hour so that people who are listening know what they're getting. We don't expect to thrash out every issue fully. I've cut across the conversation. Did you want to say more about your dads before we just do I heard someone say? Well, let's do it then. I heard someone say.
Okay. So I heard, Dino, I heard you say that your dad came over when he was 15 and he was by himself. I'm just wondering why, what led to that, and why he was by himself and so young when he came?
So pretty much what I remember the story was that, so he essentially, because he was the eldest of all the brothers, so he had three brothers and two sisters, and they, like, you know, they were living in, you know, regional, you know, in a small community in Italy, and quite poor and things as well. So the opportunity to go to Australia to find work, you know, was a huge opportunity for them. So essentially he was the guinea pig of the family to go, see if you can find some work, see if you can start saving up some money, and then bring the rest of us over. So it was pretty much was there to come over, and then, you know, to set up the rest of the family to come over. So it was just the what he had to do as the eldest brother back then. Wow. So yeah, it's pretty crazy. It's pretty amazing. So, you know, as I said, there was a lot of admiration I had for Dad. So, you know, there was a lot of things that he did that was just mind-blowing. And a lot of this I only found out later on in life as well. You know, so, yeah, it's just crazy if you think about it.
Yep.
I heard Kirk say something like, when we were talking about, you know, cleaning the garage floor or whatever it was, and why you do that, Kirk, he said something like, so much of what you have to deal with day to day is out of your control, that when you've got like one thing that is in your control, you really want to control it. You said it way simpler and better than I just said it. But it really struck me because that is something that I have felt so much and just not had the words for. And I think we were talking about it in that context from, like, you know, a situation where it's maybe a problem or it's a, you know, it's a silly thing or whatever, something that you want someone to stop doing in that circumstance. But you know what, mate? I think also it's so important to have that. It is so important to have something that yours to control, a passion project, something, whatever it is. It may be the garage floor, but it's a coping thing. And I think, it kind of... You need both sides of it, don't you? Where it is, it can be a problem, but also it's the thing that keeps you afloat. And I was so grateful to hear those words. I really liked it.
Wow.
Thanks, mate.
I think it was, Gary, when you talked about your deck and, you know, about, you know, finally hearing, you know, I suppose when you finally got to get to hear something that you've been wanting to hear, but it was not the appropriate, was not exactly how you wanted to hear it, you know, is just kind of really resonated with me about that sort of component, and can completely understand that you finally hear what you want to hear, but it's not what you want to hear.
That's got to be life, hasn't it?
Yeah.
Well, right. I'm gonna quickly take two, because this one I'll just say we might come back to. I think it was Dino, said something, there are certain things that make you feel like a man. Right. And I think you were referring to one of these tasks that we sometimes do that seem to be useless. Feeling like a man. I love us to come back one time and have a conversation about what is it that means? Because I really think it's worth exploring. What is it that makes you feel like a man, and why does it? You know, so that we could do that. Yeah. But the thing
I quickly jump on that too? I know we're running out of time, but I think it's really important that your partner can recognize how important it is sometimes to feel like a man, which is something I've experienced. I'd love to talk, and we can talk more about that in that next topic, but I think it's such a valid thing.
Yeah. Excellent. Yeah, let's do it.
That's really good. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So the thing that I heard that I did want to mention was, Daniel, you were talking about realistic expectations early on, you know, and about how, what is it that's expected of you? Is it expected of you by others or by yourself? Is it realistic? Is it ridiculous? Man, that's wise. You know, there's so much that covers. So thanks for saying that. That's great.
Thanks.
Listen, guys, this has been brilliant again. You know, thank you for getting into the four bean mix at this time. And this is the Dad's Day episode. So all you dads out there, especially you beans, good on you guys. We are proud to know that, you know, we're on the same journey with you in so many ways, even though it's all individual for us. We have a lot in common, and we wish you all the best on Dad's Day. We hope that you're able to feel some sense of, you know, assurance that, you know, even if you haven't always done your best, or even if you have, that there are going to be opportunities for more in the future. And hopefully somebody around you today will show you some love. If not, you know, have some love from us, get a bloke's hug from us, slap on the back, good on you guys. And we will be back with another Four Bean Mix soon. Please keep sending us your questions and your comments. I don't know where we'd be without them. And we want to thank you for listening to us for the Four Bean Mix. Thank you, Dino. Thank you, Kirk. Thank you, Daniel. Great to be together.
Thanks, Gary. See you, legend.
Thanks, boy.
See you.
Thank you.
See you.
Bye.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.